بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه وله. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله تعالى وبركاته. And welcome productive Muslims to another interview. And this one is a very very special interview. Some of you remember at the beginning of Ramadan we had a special Ramadan fast challenge for our friend from Think Productive, Graham Alcott, the founder of thinkproductive.co.uk, where he tried fasting Ramadan for 3 days with us, and he wrote a blog post every single day and shared his experience. And I'm sure some of you read those articles and found them really really insightful. So today we're here to talk more about that experience. Graham, how are you today?
I'm very well, how are you doing?
Very good. So fasting, I just want to ask you, overall, how was it?
On a number of levels, it was a really interesting challenge and just really fascinating. I think the first thing to say is just interacting with all of your readers from around the world was pretty amazing. I got loads of kind of emails and tweets and stuff. And I looked down one of the blog comment strings, and it was like, you know, Bosnia, Wales, the Middle East, Nigeria, you know, like all down in terms of the comments. So that was really fascinating, just the kind of interaction with people. Is first of all just something to just mention and just be appreciative of. In terms of the challenge itself, I was really not sure what to expect at all. I don't think I've ever fasted before. Certainly as a non-Muslim, it was for me something I was curious about and you know, just kind of keen to just have some small experience of. I'm aware that 3 days is a really kind of small experience in itself. But yeah, I mean, I think the first couple of days were probably more difficult for me. And I think the way the body is adjusting to that first, you know, first period of fasting is probably, the most difficult for a lot of people. And I felt like the third day, it really started to change for me. It started to get much more natural. It started to feel, actually a really comfortable thing rather than something I was fighting against, and actually something that was, you know, I can see how that very naturally becomes, you know, part of your lifestyle rather than, something that you're kind of worried and scared about as I was before I started. You know?
So what's the biggest productivity challenge you thought if someone's fasting?
Well, I think, I mean, you know, those people who've read my book, How to Be a Productivity Ninja, I think, you know, something I talk about a lot, and, I think I end up, really repeating this message a lot, is that it's not about how you manage time, but it's how you manage your own attention. And I think in Ramadan, that becomes a really critical aspect. So, you know, the fact that your attention and your ability to focus on stuff comes from how your brain is is wired at a particular moment. So that can be, you know, your state and your emotion, but it can also be, you know, how many calories are whizzing around your body at that stage, you know, and what your blood sugar is doing and various things like that. So I found, you know, particularly in the first day, obviously the part of the adjustment in the diet is because you're not eating, your body is suffering withdrawals of certain things. So if you're someone that eats a lot of, you know, things like sugars and things like that, you get, those kind of headaches that really come from that. So, I mean, one of the learning points for me going forward is going to be to really cut down on sugar more generally. So not having sugar in my tea, not eating so many snacks with unnatural sugars, and replacing that with wonderful foods like dates and things like that, which was a real kind of, revelation for me. I wasn't really someone who was eating dates before, and I'm definitely a convert to that. But I think, I think attention management is really the key thing. And also, I think there's something interesting about flexibility. I mean, I'd be really keen to hear your view on this as well, in terms of how people integrate their faith with their work, in that sense of, you know, what leeway does your boss give you? Like, are you able to, for example, take naps? Taking naps for me was quite easy because I was working from home a couple of those days. But like, is that something that that could be integrated into working days? Because I think that's pretty key.
Yeah, it's important, because some of the challenge of productivity people face, as said, is to manage their focus. But more importantly, it's not being allowed to, given that flexibility. So a lot of employers think and expect that people should work the same hours. I mean, some countries in the Middle East offer cut down the working hours to 6 hours and a half instead of 8 hours. But then the work itself hasn't really changed, and people are still not, you know, there's two parts. The employers do not want the employees to use Ramadan as an excuse for not being productive. And the employees are saying, well, you know, we want to become productive, but we need some kind of flexibility in terms of working hours, in terms of maybe the time we come to work, time we leave work, and perhaps even sometimes the, in terms of, you know, taking naps or just taking small breaks during work. So it's more like education is needed on both sides. We believe that, you know, the employees need to be educated about how to manage their energy levels, how to manage their attention during fasting, and what they can do to improve it. And employees need to be sort of educated as well, especially employees that are not aware of fasting or the challenges of fasting. So it's very interesting. It's a very interesting combination to have that. So how did you overcome that? How did you overcome that challenge of managing your attention and sort of being able to focus on your work whilst fasting?
Well, I can certainly talk about one particular period of time, which I think was the Thursday morning at about 3 a.m., where I'd just gone back on to fast after the you know, after the kind of end of the evening, start of the morning meal. So in the UK here, 2:34 a.m. is the time I was given to be back on fast. And after that time, I realized that my stomach was pretty full. I'd just eaten my, you know, sort of final meal until you know, the end of that evening. And I realized that it was going to be difficult for me to sleep at that point because, you know, I was just digesting all this food. So I just started working, and I worked through until about 4:30, 5 a.m. On one of the days, and found it a really productive time because for me, there was, you know, there was no one else was around. Everyone else was asleep. And I felt really awake. I felt really engaged with my work. And also there was a kind of peace that comes from, of just kind of knowing that you're back on an undertaking again, you know, so knowing that it's like the start of a long road that day of being on fast. There's something quite sort of peaceful and meditative around that. So I actually found that I was able to garner some really useful periods of attention and productivity. And then I suppose the opposite of that would be there's a couple of days where it was kind of 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. In the UK here, it's been very hot, and also it's probably one of the longest, like the days are really long. So it's a kind of very long, period of fast here at the moment. And so by 4 or 5 p.m, knowing that I wasn't going to eat again until 9, I was just, you know, all I could do really was nap or just kind of sit around or whatever. So there was definitely some times where in a normal standard working day, I probably would have been, you know, doing my, you know, sort of normal work, and I wasn't able to. But then likewise, there was times where in a normal standard working day, I'd have been asleep, and I was doing some really good work. So I think that flexibility thing is really, really important. And I also think there's, I kind of learned towards the end that it's not just about, I think when I first started, I sort of had this label in my head, and I was describing it in my head as, you know, surviving Ramadan. So seeing the fast as a wholly, you know, challenging thing. And of course it's challenging, but I think as I got through to like the third day, by the third day I could really see that there's some real benefits of it too. So even though it's challenging, there's also, you know, I kind of felt a little bit kind of lighter, and my attention felt much less distracted, you know, just generally. So knowing that you don't have to get up and prepare food and go and get drinks and stuff like that. It's just because it's one less thing to have to think about, then I just found I was much more engaged with my work around that time as well. So yeah, I mean, there's a kind of, you know, there's a kind of, survival aspect, but there's also a real kind of positive benefits to it as well.
Did you find that you were able to, focus better because also you're also very careful about where your attention is being spent, because you know, everything you spend your attention on will end up taking some energy from you. So were you more careful about where you spend your energy during the day because you're really conscious of your energy levels?
Yeah, I tend to look at attention as being kind of there's three different types of attention. You have proactive attention, which is when you're really fully engaged and you're on top of your game. And I think most people have a lot less of that generally than they think. So you've probably got a couple of hours a day of really proactive, you know, good quality attention. Then you've got active attention, so you're just, you know, you're awake and you're aware and you can do stuff, but you can't really do the hardest stuff. And then finally, you've got inactive attention. So when you're just really tired or you're a bit groggy or whatever, you know, you can probably do certain tasks. So you can clear bits of your email inbox and stuff like that, but you can't do stuff that really requires much thinking. And I found, certainly with how I manage my attention during those 3 days, it's very much about putting the stuff that requires the proactive attention, putting that first. So doing the difficult stuff first thing in the day, because you kind of know that as the day goes on, you know, your energy is going to wane a little bit and you are going to feel, you know, just a little bit lighter and a little bit more floaty, but in a sense that isn't necessarily sort of most conducive to really high level concentration. So the start of the day for me was where I was doing things like, you know, I was just over that 3 days, just negotiating quite a big contract. Had a couple of other bits of our educational content that I was just working on. So it was kind of, that stuff really is taxing for my brain. You know, it takes a lot of energy. So I was doing that first. The contract was actually the thing I was doing at 3 o'clock in the morning on that Wednesday. And just, you know, doing that stuff first and then giving yourself the permission to do, you know, the more kind of active and inactive stuff later on and just being okay with that, you know. So having done 3 or 4 hours of really, you know, quality thinking, knowing that the next 2 or 3 hours are actually going to be, you know, like stuff that has less impact and stuff that needs to be done nevertheless, but, you know, you're going to give yourself permission to not be kind of flogging yourself through the whole of the month to try and always be on the top of your game, because, you know, I don't think that's possible for anyone at any time, but certainly if you're fasting, there's an extra challenge there.
Yeah, brilliant. And I like the way you said in the blog post about front loading your tasks, and especially you're saying that, you know, using the early hours. We have, there's a Prophet Muhammad saying that the early hours are blessed for my nation, meaning that the early hours, you can do so much in those early hours. And a lot of people talk about it. So having that phrase, front loading your task, meaning doing your task right after that pre-dawn meal, where you just sit down and you sort of, you've had your meal, you can't really sleep. Now, for the Muslim, they have the prayers to go to, and then maybe some of them spend time reciting the Quran, the holy book, and then they come back. And then, what I do actually, I start working after that. After I come back from the mosque, I sit down, I start working. And as you said, I do my best writing, my best sort of thinking at that time. And then, you said it's just towards the end of the day, you sort of do the less demanding tasks. And in the afternoon, sometimes, well, something interesting some people get involved with is before the sunset, they actually get involved with charity projects. Volunteer projects, because it just takes your mind off the food and you're helping out and you feel like, you know, it feels good as well. So a lot of people go involved. So some people get involved with feeding fasting people, so they go and set up community fasting areas, and or they go to traffic lights. Those who are stuck in traffic, they give them something to break their fast before they head home. So it happens. So people get involved with a lot of charity projects where, you know, go to poor areas and they sort of distribute some food. So that actually is another way of managing their trying to do be productive in a way. We call it be socially productive, but at the same time, it doesn't sort of take too much. And it actually feels good because you're volunteering, moving around and helping out. So that's really, really good. I mean, I was really, really happy about the way you are proactively managing your fasting. I think that's important. I think a lot of people think fasting is a challenge when they don't proactively manage it. They just sort of fall into it and they want to keep the same routine, want to keep the same same energy levels, and want to do the same work that they're doing without before fasting, and then they sort of struggle, and then that's when it really hits them. If you're doing it for a month, it really, really gets to you. But if you're flexible, if you're conscious of your fasting, if you're conscious how you approach it, that can make a huge difference in terms of how you prepare for your fasting.
Yeah, I think the Friday for me, I had a day where I was basically working from home. So I think I went out early in the morning and then came back. But then I was basically at home for most of the day. And that was much easier for me than sort of, you know, one of the other days where I was, you know, I was out traveling on the tube and, you know, meetings in the middle of London on a very hot, busy, sweaty day. And I think, you know, having those kind of days are obviously going to be more difficult, you know, particularly if you're out in the sunshine in London where, you know, most places don't really have air conditioning and, you know, you're just kind of sweating and, you know, losing a lot of water that way. So I think, you know, in terms of how you plan it, to be able to to take that slightly, you know, helicopter level view of perhaps your week or even your month and say, these are the days where I'm going to really focus on the office work. And for me, like having a full day of the office work and then a full day of meetings is better than having 2 days that are mixed between those two things.
That's great.
Does that make sense? Because then you've got a whole day where you can really say, you know, I'm going to look after my body on this day and I'm going to be really focused and I'm going to be, you know, I'm fully engaged for the whole day. So just kind of managing the schedule around that is, I think, you know, I'd imagine, you know, I obviously only did 3 days, but I'd imagine if I was doing it for a month, that would be something I'd really need to look at, because I think, you know, the day that I was out and about really felt much harder for me than the other days.
Okay. And how about the, in terms of the food you ate, the sort of, what did you have for the pre-dawn meal or the evening meal? Were you conscious of the choices of food you had then and how you felt they affected the rest of the day for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this 3 day experiment was part of a wider thing I'm doing in the month of July, which is an experiment called Fuel. I'm doing a different productivity experiment every month this year. So the Ramadan thing was one small part of a slightly bigger thing, which is part of an even bigger thing. The Fuel experiment in July has been about just looking at optimum diet and optimum nutrition for productivity. And I wanted to do the Ramadan thing because it felt like a really nice, you know, kind of complement and contrast to the rest of it. But I think a couple of things that I've learned through doing the more general Fuel experiment in July. So I had a nutritionist who has written a diet plan for me. Someone called Colette Hennigan, who runs a company in the UK here called Optimum Living. And so she wrote this diet plan for me, and it included things like a brain fuel shake. So one of the things that she noticed in me, because I'm vegetarian as well, so I don't eat meat, and it makes it more difficult for me to eat a lot of protein. So she has developed this brain fuel shake for me, which includes hemp protein, which is a sort of natural extract from a hemp plant, and you can just get that in a, you know, sort of health food shop or a lot of supermarkets, and then it includes a load of other you know, kind of superfoods, so actually things I'd never heard of, like camu camu, which I had to get off Amazon. You can't even really get it in a lot of shops, and spirulina, which has become a very sort of big superfood in the UK over the last year or so, which is a kind of green seaweed like plant. And just full of lots of antioxidants and nutrients and stuff that's just really good for just kind of fueling and powering your body, really. So I was making sure that I had one of those pretty quickly once I broke fast. So I would break fast in the evening with dates. I live in Whitechapel in East London right now. So I'm literally just around the corner from lots of Muslim shops selling the iftar boxes at the end of the day and things like that. So I was able to go and get plenty of dates and stuff to sort of finish the fast. So I'd start with dates, which was a real, as I said before, a real revelation. I don't think I've had dates for 15, 20 years, and they're absolutely delicious. I'm going to be eating them the whole time. So dates and water was my sort of breaking of the fast, which I think I just chose because I'd read that on Mohammed, you sent me some advice from the NHS. Here about, you know, the kind of standard breaking the fast meal. So I just went with it because of that, really. And then I would tend to have something that was quite carbohydrate based. So I'd have something like a prawn curry or something like that with plenty of rice. And I found, you know, once you get your appetite back, I could eat quite a lot of the rice, and that would be my sort of main sort of piece of carbs. And then once I'd got to sort of, you know, 1:30 in the morning and was just about to go back onto the fast again, then I'd usually have something like an omelette. So again, just getting more protein in, plenty of like fresh fruit. And I also found that I was really reluctant through the fasting, through the whole 3 days and probably a couple of days either side, to go anywhere near things like, you know, chocolate bars and crisps and the more kind of, you know, unhealthy foods, because I just feel like, you know, you really need to make sure that the energy you're putting into your body is low GI, you know, so it's that kind of more slow release energy. Mm-hmm. So things like porridge are really good for that. But obviously, if you have a lot of, artificial sugars, it just sends your blood sugar, you know, up and down on a roller coaster. So if if you've, you know, peaked your sugar with loads of chocolate just before you break your fast, then you're going to crash all day. It's not a particularly wise thing. Yeah. So I was just really conscious of just, I guess, eating well, and that was a really nice, you know, kind of extra byproduct, really, of doing the fasting was just, you know, the fact that as well as fasting, I'm also eating really well. And just kind of planning that out and just being very careful around that. There's actually on the thinkproductive.co.uk website, you can find the recipe for my brain fuel shake on there. So if you just Google brain fuel shake, think productive, you'll probably find
awesome.
It there.
Awesome. I think you start a new trend in the Muslim world now. Everyone has a brain fuel shake before fasting. That'd be great. Okay. So now that you've gone through this for 3 days, do you think that fasting can be used as a legitimate excuse to be unproductive at work?
Well, I think it probably depends to some extent on the flexibility of the employer. I mean, it certainly made me think about, you know, some people I've worked with over the years here who've been fasting, and, you know, it doesn't really feel like the organization has made any real kind of concessions or changes. But I suppose that's, you know, perhaps it's kind of easier to lobby for those changes if you're in the majority, whereas, you know, Muslims here are, it's a minority religion here. But I think, you know, certainly that the cultural aspect of the organization, you know, like how the organization, you know, accommodates fasting, certainly something it made me think about. I don't really think it's an excuse to be unproductive. I think it's certainly a reason that you will have periods of a lack of productivity. I think there's no doubt about that. You know, there's going to be times where I found there's some times where I was feeling really kind of, you know, just groggy or just low on energy and a bit grumpy and things like that. So I think there'll be times where we're less productive. And also, I think there's times where you can be really productive during fasting. And I think, you know, the key thing around all of that is that at the end of the day, we're all human. And, you know, humans are not designed to be perfectly productive the whole time. So I think for me, it's just, you know, it's just an extension of that idea, really, that, you know, we talk a lot about how a productivity ninja is not a superhero. Yeah. You know, it's not worth trying to adopt special powers. Really, the best thing to do is just acknowledge that we're human, acknowledge that all the amazing things that are ever done in the world, you know, in terms of work and productivity have been done by humans, you know, and that means that's a really empowering thing too. You know, like all the, you know, world leaders that you admire and so on and so forth, and the big inventors in the world, they've all been humans too, and they all have days where they're groggy, or, you know, days where they've been low on energy too. So I think it can be a really good thing as well as a really bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, and also, I mean, we always mention the example that during the times of Prophet Muhammad himself, and even the time after that, where a lot of the breakthroughs in the Islamic civilization happened during Ramadan. So it's, you know, breakthrough battles or breakthrough discoveries were happening in Ramadan when people were fasting. So it's also, I'm reminded that perhaps the fasting, although seen as a challenge, but if people think proactive about it, if they understand it, if, you know, if they see how they can manage it, it's always, I would say to people, do not blame Ramadan, do not use Ramadan as an excuse for being unproductive, but really look into yourself and how you're managing your own Ramadan. And be conscious of it. If you can manage your, if you can manage your energy levels, manage your sleep, manage your productivity overall, Ramadan will not be a challenge. But if you just, again, crash into it, then, you know, then yes, you may struggle with it. But yeah, definitely, I'm glad we have came to the same conclusion, because I'm a bit worried.
Yeah, I just want to say something else about that as well. Is you know. So what you were just saying there around the Prophet Muhammad and you know, things happening and, you know, developments being sparked because of Ramadan, I think there's something really interesting about that, you know, also from a point of view of changing your normal routine. So I think, you know, it's very easy in so many ways to get stuck in a bit of a rut. You know, so if you think about how most people start their working day, it's like, you know, you walk into the office and one of the first things you do is you fire up your emails and you start looking at emails. And, you know, my view on that is you immediately put yourself on the back foot, because you're not thinking about what the day needs to hold for you. You're thinking about what are all the things that everyone has just sent you on email that you need to react to. So you're not thinking proactively in that sense. So if you think about how you could break that, you know, to start your day by not turning on email is a really small thing. But what that means is you're sat at your desk and you're proactively planning. So it's a really small change in habit, but it could be a really big and profound thing in terms of how it shifts your thinking. And Ramadan, for me, seems like a really interesting opportunity to look at that. Sure. Because I think, you know, personally, my own body clock and sleep and food went completely, crazy and different to how it would normally be. And I think, you know, personally, it's a really nice thing to do more generally, is to sort of think about your habits and be conscious of them and try and make, you know, proactive changes to how you work based on, you know, breaking habit. I think habit can be a really a difficult thing if you're in, you know, if you're in a rut with something. It can be difficult to even realize that you're doing it, and difficult to realize that you have a bad habit around something. But like Ramadan kind of forces you to think in different ways, which I think can be quite empowering too.
That's really interesting. And actually, it connects to what we were talking about before the call about, you know, the extra fast that, you know, is recommended to do, you know, after Ramadan, for example, recommended to fast either 3 days a month or twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. I mean, that, again, that forces that breaking of habit during the week itself or during the month itself. So it's a very interesting way of putting it. And definitely, I mean, actually, personally, I felt that whenever I went on these sort of voluntary fast, that it sort of puts you on, almost puts you on the reset button. So you go through the week and you're almost about to get into this loop of maybe unproductivity or a loop of not getting much done. And immediately sets you up. And then, okay, what am I doing? Where am I going? And just keeps on resetting you. That's really helpful to have a renewal.
I think that can be the same, you know, mentally in terms of how you think, and also physically in terms of, you know, how well your body regulates itself. So there's a lot of people at the moment talking about a book here in the UK, which I've not read, but it talks about this this 5-2 diet. So you have 2 days in every week where you're fasting. And, you know, their version of fasting is slightly less strict than the Ramadan version. So the big question I was getting asked here in the UK when I said, oh, I'm doing this thing and whatever, the first question would always be, oh, but you can drink water, right? That's fine. And I was like, no, you know, because in this other fast that's allowed. But I think the idea with this 5-2 fast is that you have, you know, just a regular thing that physically just resets your body clock. So it's almost like, you know, you're using up, you know, some of those excess calories that we might be consuming on other days, and just almost like shocking your body back into being more efficient in the way that it digests stuff. So I think there's, you know, there's probably, I mean, it's one of those things that sometimes these things come and go in kind of fads, right? So you get like a trend where everyone's doing it, and then in 6 months everyone's forgotten about it. But I think it could really be quite an interesting sort of way to think and operate more generally. And certainly something I'll give some thought to is that kind of, like you said, the kind of voluntary additional fasting, and to sort of have that, you know, just have that sort of almost like in your toolbox as one of those other things that you can do just to kind of challenge your habits.
Brilliant. Now, it takes a lot of sort of willpower, motivation to push on with fasting. Did you ever feel like giving up on some days?
Well, I was talking to someone else about this, and they said, oh, you know, this is the kind of thing you would do, Graham, isn't it? I'm just one of those people who, like, when I get an idea in my head about doing something, I'm really stubborn, and I'm like really, and that has really good qualities to it, and it also has some really negative aspects to it as well. You know, I can really put my foot down on certain things, but when it came to this, it was like, no, this is what I'm doing. I'm embracing it. Of course, there was times where I was like, oh, I would, you know, what I would give for, you know,
a glass of water.
for just a glass of water. You know, it was always water, actually. Water and tea are my two sort of, you know, the things I'll sit at my desk and just drink all day. So not being able to have tea and not being able to have water was really hard. Less the food, actually. It was more the drink. But I think once I got into that, you know, for me, it's almost like a slightly, you know, I kind of slightly have fun with that, you know. So it's like, oh, I've got another 3 hours to go and I feel terrible, but isn't this kind of interesting and fun? so my own willpower is often not something that I need to work on that much. But I think it's certainly, you know, I certainly got the sense from a lot of people, you know, who were sort of commenting back on the blogs and who I was kind of interacting with on Twitter and stuff, that as well as being about, you know, developing and maintaining your willpower around the fast, you can also use it to perhaps kind of change other habits. So I had a couple of people kind of say things to me like, you know, I was using it a lot to, you know, using Ramadan as a time where I was, you know, thinking about how I interacted digitally and how much I was online and how much time I was wasting, you know, being on Facebook or checking the internet or whatever. You know, people kind of saying things like that, which is like, you know, they're kind of using that time to develop willpower in other areas, you know. And I think that for me is quite an interesting thing, because it certainly puts just the idea of self-discipline at the forefront of your mind, you know. It's like, because you're thinking about it all, because, you know, every time you crave a glass of water and then you can't have one, it makes you think, okay, so I'm, you know, like I'm on top of my own thoughts and cravings here. And I think that can easily go further than just the food and drink aspects.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Prophet Muhammad saying that says that whoever does not leave saying bad words or being sinful during fasting hours, then God does not want him to leave his food and drink. So that is not about the food and drink. That is not like giving up your food and drink. It is to, he said, every part of you should be fasting. Your brain, you know, your mind should be fasting. Your tongue should be fasting. Your eyes should be fasting. In terms of, in terms of protecting yourself and being to live this sort of pious life for a few hours of the day, or 12, 15, 18 hours a day, and then seeing the impact that has on your spirituality, on yourself, and seeing how you say, well, if you could do it for about 12 or 18 hours, I'm sure you can go on and do it beyond that. I would say to people who are like smoking, who actually, you know, they actually stop smoking for 18 hours. And these are chain smokers. These are like, you know, three, four packets a day minimum. And they just completely, you know, quit during the fasting hours. And for 18 hours straight, they say, we don't actually, and I ask some of them, do you crave it? Some say, yes, we do. Some say, actually, it just doesn't enter our mind because we just completely put it off our mind, so we don't need it in these hours, and that's it. It's off our mind for in those hours. And they, but then as soon as they break the fast, the first thing they do is to pick up a cigarette. But so again, it's just that idea is that self discipline is, it's more like if you put your will to it, you really, really can do a lot of things that you think you can't do.
Yeah, just around the corner from me, the big hospital here in Whitechapel in London, the Royal London. The NHS had put up some posters saying why Ramadan is the best time to give up smoking, and it, you know, sort of targeting Muslims who smoked, and you know, maybe you can make this a sort of permanent thing. So I think it does show that it's certainly in your mind. And I was particularly thinking about an email that you'd sent me saying as well as no food and drink, make sure you don't swear as well. And I know that's something I do a lot of in day-to-day life. Something I was just really conscious of the whole time is just, you know, being on that slightly more, you know, kind of connected and peaceful state, and just being aware of some of those other aspects rather than just the food.
Brilliant, brilliant. You mentioned a lot about the sort of the community feeling, and although you sort of felt it on a more digital level, but just having a community, and I always think, when I'm fasting, is like 1.86 billion people on the world fast at the same time for a whole month on the same period. And in the UK, it's about 3 million people at least. So that community aspect, and actually, one thing I was going to add to your experience to make it even more interesting was to go break your fast at the Whitechapel Mosque, that didn't push you too far. But, the community feeling, I think you felt that online. People are like sort of very, very understanding. Very, do you see that playing a big role in helping people fast and making sure that they sort of keep on going and basically be productive also, just that community feeling, and we're all doing it together, we're all in it together, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was quite interesting, obviously, as a non-Muslim, I was you know, the only person in my immediate circle of people who was fasting, so I suppose there was almost like the opposite type of community around that. Is like, I'm the kind of outsider doing this different thing to everyone else, so everyone's curious about that. So there's that kind of aspect to it, but also living in an area that's, you know, very heavily populated by Muslims, it's kind of nice for me to be able to kind of go into shops and, you know, have those little conversations with the you know, shopkeeper or whatever. So I think certainly the community aspect is, you know, is massive. I kind of felt like I was missing out by. I basically only had 3 days, and I already had stuff in the schedule, so it made it quite difficult for me to go down to the mosque or anything like that. But I think certainly if I was going to do it again, that for me would be something I would definitely want to, you know, to do and experience. And
brilliant. And so finally, I think last
You know, and to just be involved in some of those other, you know, I kind of felt there was rituals around. I was going to say, I kind of felt like there was rituals around it that I was probably unaware of, and you know, and sort of missing out on that part of the experience. So just the, you know, just where the prayers fit in and stuff like that was kind of, for me, that was on my mind, because I was kind of just ignorant around that, and yeah, it'd be kind of interesting to look at that as something different. And I think also there's so many people on the blog comments who were saying things like, okay, so next year you're going to do half of Ramadan, and then the next year you're going to do the whole thing. I mean, there's something nice about how the community really supports people in that. And I think, and also reading a few messages from people who were quite recent converts to Islam, and, you know, maybe had done three or four, it was like maybe their third or fourth Ramadan. So I think, you know, from that perspective, that must really help. You know, if you're coming into this for the first time and you're like, you know, how do I deal with this?
Yeah.
To have that community wrapped around it is, I think, you know, a really, really important part of it.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, there's some popular demand online for, I think there'll be a petition going on around now saying grammed fast one whole month.
there was a couple of people saying, you know, in terms of, you know, almost like saying to me, it'd be great if you do it, but just watch your health and maybe do half next year and the full one the year after. I mean, I'm at, like, having done the 3 days, like, yeah. I kind of realize before I committed to it, I think we had a conversation and I said, I think you said to me, why don't you do a day? And I said, I don't think a day is long enough. And we settled on 3 days. But as those 3 days went on, and certainly looking back on it, I realized 3 days is so small. But I think it'd be, I don't know, what do you think about whether I should do a, can you jump straight to a full one, or do you think I should do a kind of half of Ramadan next year to ease me in?
No, I think full month, probably after 3 days, you know, really after 3 days, your body adjusts. And
yeah.
It's just, then you really understand the sort of struggle. And by the 15th, 16th day, you get to this level where you're almost floating into Ramadan in terms of, that, you know, it becomes part and parcel of your lifestyle, and you just don't think about it anymore. And that's interesting in a way, and also challenging in a certain way, because sometimes it's interesting because if you don't think about it anymore, you're not conscious of yourself, you're not careful of the food you eat, you're not careful of your sleep,
yeah.
And then you end up just having those really, really bad sort of fasting days where you're really struggling. So is this going through it for a month will throw so many different situations? I mean, you already had, I mean, for me, it was, when you said that you missed your pre-dawn meal, that's like 99% of the Muslims around the world face that. I mean, I have that every Ramadan. There's one day of Ramadan that I don't know, hopefully not yet this Ramadan, but there's always one day where I just wake up late and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this is going to be a long day.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone goes to that experience, but as you said, you just pull through. It's not very, I made a video last couple of nights to say, you know, don't freak out. If you missed your pre-dawn meal, just don't freak out. Calm down, you'll make it through. And just having that sort of willpower in your mind, having that sort of mental ability to sit down, okay, it's not the end of the world, can make a huge difference to your fasting.
I'll share a little story around that, which is a good friend of mine who we did some work together in Uganda a few years ago, and I went to visit him when he was at the University of Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, mm-hmm. And he got the text message through. To say that Ramadan had just started, and the night before we'd been out like in this nightclub very late, dancing away. Obviously he wasn't drinking alcohol, but you know, he was obviously really dehydrated by, you know, just the sweat and the dancing and everything else. And then woke up and realized that the fast had already started, and you know, looked outside the window and it was like 40 or 45 degrees heat in Tanzania, really, really hot, really dry. And I just looked at him like, man, this is going to be a long day for you. You know? But just, you know, I suppose my reflection on that has always been, you know, how he took that in his stride and was so, I guess, so kind of gracious around, okay, this is what, you know, this is what today will bring. Yeah. And was, yeah, it's just one of those stories that's always kind of stuck in my head.
Yeah, I mean, this is the amazing thing about Ramadan is many of those stories where people just, if they wake up late or they, you know, have this bad fasting days, they don't just throw in the towel. They just push on. Like, okay, fine. This is as bad as it gets. Yeah. And they just completely push on. And I think that sort of determination, willpower, motivated by religion, motivated by sort of the conviction into this, really pushes them to go beyond what they would normally do. I mean, if they're just trying to follow a diet, for example, they're just following mm-hmm. some kind of
maybe some kind of doctor's prescription. They would have given up a long time ago. But there's something about, you know, having that conviction in this, and they sort of believe in it, that really says, okay, go ahead, and they just go through it. Brilliant, Graham. Really, really, this has been a fascinating experiment. And to be honest, I didn't know what to expect when I first sort of challenged you on this. But I'm really, really happy, really happy, really happy I did. Because you just get a, and I said, a lot of people were saying in the comments where having that someone who's sort of outsider's perspective, someone who first time for them, you know, because we had it since we started fast, so like 7 years old. And it really, you know, became part and parcel of our life. But now having someone who really experienced the first time in adulthood where they're not really used to not having food and drink for long hours, I think that that really brings a different perspective. One last question. I mean, I wish people mention this a lot. They say, did you feel yourself feeling more charitable during the fasting, where you sort of realize what hunger means and how much, you know, people around the world are suffering from hunger, what that really sort of hits them, you know, in the pangs that you go through. Did that cross your mind during the fasting?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. In terms of charitable stuff, I mean, my business is a social business, and you know, we have a lot of different interactions and things that we do with charities in all kinds of different ways. So I think I'm kind of thinking about that stuff and working on various charitable endeavors pretty much the whole time. But I think certainly what was different during Ramadan was just more of a feeling of kind of humility and connectedness. So it was just, you know, just really more, I guess, just more appreciative of like the world around me and the people around me. And, you know, grateful certainly for everything that I have and, you know, the life that I have as well. And I think, you know, I can totally see that there's, you know, that I guess just that whole experience just brings you background to you know, to A, being grateful for what you have, and B, wanting to, you know, to make a difference and to connect and to be charitable during that time. So yeah, there's definitely that kind of feeling of kind of humility and wanting to help people more.
Brilliant. Graham, thank you very, very much for this interview, and thank you very, very much for taking on the challenge. I'll try and think of a new challenge for you, but I'll keep you posted.
It's been a real pleasure. Well, I can feel the one of doing a full Ramadan coming. And, I'm not adverse to it. I can certainly be persuaded, I think. So we'll keep talking on that one.
We'll talk about it, inshallah. Bari, I'm looking forward to meeting you in Dubai in about a month's time, and maybe we'll be announcing a joint class coming up soon on workplace productivity. So thinkproductive.co.uk, Productive Muslim, we're putting together a joint class. So if you guys are interested to know more about this, keep following us on Productive Muslim and keep checking your emails. We'll let you know in about a month's time, perhaps, about the more details. So Graham, thank you very much and have a good day.
Thank you.
Take care.